Today is Wednesday, April the 16th. Have you survived and filed?
Both.
All right. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County First District Supervisor Rex Bone. Humboldt Republic Original.
Avenue of the Giants.
Okay. You didn't design that, did you?
No.
Okay. Because those clouds kind of looked like a nuclear.
They do, but they got
nuclear
trees
orange,
in.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that. It's just another young kid starting a local business.
Okay. Pushing on Rex.
They all played Little League for me. So.
Oh, there you go. Okay. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time getting an update on the McKay track vote going 5-0. There was interesting byplay off of that. And also, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about Lance Mattson, who passed 10 days ago or so.
This weekend. Yeah, exactly.
More wittiness from Mr. Bone when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. You want a quote from our Quotable Women book?
Please.
Book? Okay. So do you volunteer for the Soroptimist, or did you get drafted this year?
They call me, tell me when to be there, and I show up. And Soroptimist does such a great job. They had 250 people down there at the Adorney Center, and it was a great fundraiser, and they had over 20 people walking this year, and it was a good deal. Money was made for their charities.
And you didn't have to end up in the bay.
Didn't end up in the bay, just in the... I guess I was just in the blogs.
There you go. Our quote this afternoon comes from Alice Toklas. Quote, 1954. Experience is never at a bargain price.
Isn't that Alice B. Toklas, the brownie maker?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought I'd do it a little different for
okay.
you. But thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, my. You happy you're not running for re-election this cycle?
I guess there's a reason they call it the silly season. I think running for office this last time was probably as much fun as I've had, though, too. I got to go out. I mean, I know a lot of people in the community and, through the whole, but I met so many people that I hadn't really officially met and things like that. So the door-to-door and people coming up and asking questions, I think that's the advantage of running. I think it's all the side stuff, the side BS that goes on that's just very tormenting to anybody running for office.
Do you need to have a machine to run?
Need to have a lot of friends. I think some people need a machine. I think some people need handlers, I guess, maybe, but I was very fortunate. Most of the people, but in fact, I'd probably say all the people that helped me, I've known for over 20, 25 years, and my main guy I've known for over 50 years. So that's kind of rewarding that you can have a relationship that long and they'll put that much faith in you to work alongside you.
They're still willing to help you out.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it. They know the goods and the bads. I mean, and it's just, they'll tell you that it's 50% plus one and you win, but I don't think you do. I think you need to show good numbers and hopefully keep numbers like that. And
well, actually, if you got 50% plus one, considering the turnouts, that probably bumps you to about 75 to 80% on the vote.
Yeah, we actually had a pretty good turnout, comparatively speaking, in the first district. So I was pretty happy with the numbers and our race was pretty good. I mean, I always tell people that Annette and Cheryl were great opponents because we all kept it, I thought, pretty much on the up and up. You've got, when you run, people are passionate and sometimes things are said by all sides and things like that, and you can't control that. But I mean, all in all, I think at the end of the day, we still see each other at quite a few functions, and we still seem to be able to talk and seem to relatively get along. So that's what you hope at the end, everybody. You know, it's definitely not supposed to be a blood sport.
But it does certainly get to that point sometimes, doesn't it?
Sure seems that way.
Do you think that the debates do anything?
No. No, of course they do, but I just, it's tough. I mean, it's, you put yourself out on the line. It's amazing what your families have to put up with. I mean, I've lived here basically my whole life. I mean, we left for a while, but my sisters have been here, you know, a lot longer. They both taught in Eureka City schools for over 30 years. Their family's fairly well established. And when they hear things against me, I never hear anything bad about them though. It hurts them. They want to bow up and stuff like that. But they're also the first ones to tell me when they think I'm doing something wrong too.
Yeah.
I hear from them a lot.
The bad phone, huh?
Yeah, the bone phone.
Yeah. I would think that a lot of folks either oversimplify the process, or they really, really, really underestimate what it takes just to do the candidate thing, the events, the driving. You know, if you're in the first, if you're in Virginia's district, it's going to be a little less, or if you're a city council race, a little bit less, just because you don't have the geographic territory. But the ongoing grind.
Oh, it's a great job. It's a great job, and I've been very fortunate because I've had a relationship with the former supervisor, Jimmy Smith. I mean, we seem to have breakfast every other week. I crash his Sunday breakfast club, so I end up, you know, and if
that,
I
that
have,
would be after Mass?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I just want to make sure you know.
And, you know, and he's a phone call away, returns my phone calls. If I can't get a hold of him, I stop by his house. So, because he has so much institutional knowledge and, you know, and there's no way I could ever, you know, I sometimes hope I just fill a little portion of his shadow that he left behind because he's such a good man. But I've been fortunate. Now, a lot of people take office and never have a word said to the person they took office from. So you have that little thing.
Well, and you can kind of almost understand that with some folks because they don't want, you know, it's your turn.
Yeah.
It's not my turn. It's your turn.
Yeah.
Now. And, you know, not wanting to influence. You can understand that. Or there's the other.
They want to put their own brand on it. Yeah. And I mean, yeah. But there's still so much, no matter if they've had the office for 10 years, 12 years, 4 years, there's still ongoing projects that you'd like to have a little bit of filling in. And that doesn't always happen.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. Rex, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, you mentioned briefly about water and some of that stuff with the project, the Martin Slough Interceptor and that misunderstanding, it's called, we kind of have this lingering big question mark that's out there. Knowing there's a lawsuit, but what, 5 year build up, six
potential,
year, 10 year build
lawsuit,
up, honestly?
But you know,
yeah. So nobody can talk, but you're not one of them. So
well,
what sense are you hearing from the constituents?
You know, last week, you know, when this project first came out, there was a little concern from the Pine Hill residents, especially the residents like up on Eureka Street and stuff, that the pipe was going to go under. And so I went out with a, you know, a letter from the city of Eureka that they'd given me, and we'd met with some of the residents and told them that this is what's going to happen. It's going to be anywhere between 130 to 160 feet underneath your house. You won't feel it, it won't affect anything. Can't affect anything. It's that the pipe's going to be 2 inches thick. It's going to all the different aspects. And then we saw what happened a couple weeks ago in the paper. Contractor walked off. And so then, you know, first the good thing, and we don't get very many good things, and is the county isn't party to this project at all. This is the community services district and the city. And they have worked their tails off to get this done over the last 15, 20 years. David Tyson in the water district and thing, grant funding. Mike Thompson's been a big supporter to get this done. And so this, we're at the last stage. Pump stations have been rebuilt. This goes all the way from the O Street pump station all the way to the water treatment plant. It's a big deal, but we've reached capacity with the infrastructure that we had. So with that being said, the county, except for the fact is, if you know any more major building, which there'll be some people building someday, any major things that are going on, industrial, out that way, which it won't happen, but I mean big development or this affects low income housing, like no tomorrow if we tried to build some units out there, they need the hookup. So that's the only involvement the county has is hoping for their success because we do use the facility. But since I had made the talk with the Pine Hill residents, I got the phone calls back going, do we have a big hole below us? Do we have this and that? So I actually had the chance to walk. I got an engineer from SHN, Roland, the geologist. He's not an engineer, but the geologist. And we walked Eureka Street and talked to six or eight of the neighbors to alleviate some of the concerns. And what I got out of it, and since it's not our project, this is an accurate scenario as I have, is the pipe does daylight out there in what would be called Carrington's Field, now out there on Boone, from the golf course. So there is a pipe, and the drilling pipe is through there. But what had happened is that it sounds like the contractor, and I'm not involved in any lawsuits, it sounds like the contractor took some time off at Christmas, came back, and it was stuck. And they couldn't get it unstuck, and the fluids they were using had set up, and I'm not sure of all the different angles, and he couldn't get it going again. And it sounds like what you saw in the paper, he's claiming that it was, not a hooked in fraction of soils, it was all sand, and there's a whole bunch of different arguments going on. But I mean, the main thing I want to know is people that live up on Pine Hill and stuff like that, what they're doing now is bringing in another contractor, and the project is just going to move forward. Now, there is going to be some differences in costs, I imagine, that people are going to have to incur, and that's when the bond companies and the surety companies and the lawyers actually get to sit in the courtrooms and argue, which we seem to do a lot of anyway. So
how big is this, call it a tunnel, for the pipe?
I'm not sure. I think it's 14. The first one through, I think they're drilling two holes through two. And then what they do is they get the hole dug out, and then they actually pull the pipe back through. That's what that pipe is sitting out in the field, the way I understand it. And I think at the end it was going to, I think it started out at 16 inches. I think it ends up being 32 or 34 inches, 36 inches.
So smaller than a redwood tree.
Smaller than a redwood tree.
Might be in some of the areas that have been filled in.
And actually, they thought they might have hit a tree when they were digging because, I mean, there's so much different soils and stuff. In some places, it's 160 feet underground, 170 feet underground. I mean, it's pretty neat. And what they do is they put electric sensors in the ground over at the other end, and that's what it's aiming for. That's how they steer it.
Avoid 8th Street at Wabash.
Yeah, I guess or it goes in a circle, I guess.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's pretty extreme technology, but it's a lot less invasive if they had to come up over the top of Pine Hill and dig a 4-foot trench, 6-foot deep or 8-foot deep.
And another
pump station and everything else. So this is, in the end, it's going to be the most cost effective. It's just, it won't seem like that as they argue it out in the press. But I felt pretty relieved last week when I spent some time with the geologist and talking with Jeff Nelson from SHN and then talking with the city. again, I have not talked to the contractor, and I don't know him. He's from up north, and he may have very valid concerns, and this isn't to discontinue those. But as it sits now, I don't think we're going to, I think the project's going to move forward. This is just, as any major project in the millions, it's moving along slowly but surely.
Yeah, kind
of maybe like more they, slowly kinda, right now.
Yeah. It's 3:30.
Introducing Tapas and Tinis in the Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino. Spring is here, so on your way home from the beach, come check out the sunset. Restaurant doors will be opening an hour earlier, offering a small plate, tapas, menu available at a discounted price from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Signature martinis will be reduced to $7, and happy hour also applies with dollar-off drafts and wells. Also, make sure to check out the new spring menu for an amazing dinner, available starting at 5 p.m. daily. The Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino, just off the 101 in Trinidad.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. Rex, the McKay track vote, I guess it's one of a series, happened a week ago. Everybody was on board with it at the Supes. Does that mean everybody is on board with it, or let's take it to the next step?
Well, the next step is where we vote to finalize the aspect that we're going to accept. Let the funding partners and the Trust for Public Lands basically purchase it and transfer it to us in one fell swoop. Again, that's another vote, and I can't anticipate. But there is so many positives on this project that extend for so many years. I mean, is this a great project if we were only going to do it for 5 years? No. Is this a great project if I'm thinking about my grandchildren? Yeah.
When we first started hearing whispers about this, there was a different city manager for Eureka, and there was talk of annexation. Okay. New city manager, not here yet. Are the annexation discussions still being kicked around? Is this going to remain county forevermore and just be one of those sphere of influence kinds of things? Or are we looking at another Harrison Avenue and we're going to divide the baby?
No, I think this has been a pretty neat collaborative effort. And again, I give a lot of this credit of the collaborative efforts we've been able to have with the city of Eureka over the last few years to Virginia with all her time on the city of Eureka, and then Dave Tyson in the past, and then even with Bill Panos, and now with the next city manager as he comes in. We've got a great working relationship both with the council members and staff over there. Miles Slattery has worked real hard with our own Hank Seaman because of the success of their trail networks that they're trying to provide and bringing this into the system. I mean, it's hard to say that this won't be a benefit for the city of Eureka when it sits right on its borders. Now, annexation, I know the city of Eureka has made their sphere of influences, and they've made no bones about it, that some of them would like to look at annexation. Well, that's something the voters get to decide and when that happens. But the one thing that will probably stay positive is the McKay track for us, even if they incorporate the Cutting area, will still stay under the guidance and ownership of the County of Humboldt. That's the one thing I've been guaranteed of, but that does not stop the city of Eureka's involvement nor its partnership going forward in developing the McKay Forest into what we consider is going to be a great recreational opportunity, educational and environmental opportunity for us all as a working forest, as the trails. I mean, it has 17 miles of roads alone, and that doesn't include skid trails and stuff that we can turn into walking trails.
Oh, not BMX ride. Sorry. Measure O is on the ballot for this fall.
Yes.
There's concern by many department heads in the city of Eureka that if it doesn't pass, it's not extended, what happens? If it doesn't get extended, and get voter ratification, does that endanger any elements of what is currently seen as what this area will be done with?
As of right now, no, because the City of Eureka's involvement right now is a $5,000 involvement and a lot of staff time. And I don't see a lot of that changing. I know Measure O, if it doesn't pass, affects the police department at a major, major level and public safety as a whole. I don't know, and I can't speak for the city or anything else, but I don't think this is any time at all that we, you know, for the nominal part it takes. Measure O and public safety at this time is probably very important to the City of Eureka, and I would have to concur with that, that at this juncture that we are at right now, we're working on so many different projects trying to answer some of these problems that we have locally that seem to be escalating, that are just seem to be so far out of control, even though we're at the edge of maybe controlling it. It's just it's monumentous, and there's so many people working towards fixing some of the problems. And I mean, it's the homeless and the drug culture. I mean, those two things are, solve those and you can be king tomorrow, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's the problem, but it's not like it's not a lack of effort that's trying to solve some of these issues.
So if O doesn't pass, that's not going to really endanger the McKay Track initial rollout.
No, because the rollout's going to be very, very slow. I mean, it's going to be we're going to be able to control the rollout. I mean, it's got there's a lot of activity going out there now.
I was going to get to that. There's so much parking on Harris at this point that certain times of the day, it's tough to drive Harris. And for those folks who don't know, it's a two-way with a turn lane.
Yeah.
But with this additional attention, I guess, or realization that this area is what it is, I've seen a couple near hits, you know, pedestrian kinds of things. I mean, it's changed the dynamics already, and there's nothing there yet.
Yeah, and there's not going to be anything more there than's there now for
no
a while.
No parking down low.
Not yet. Off? I mean, it's gonna take a while to establish some of those things, because we're going through the stages. We've got a 50-year plan. It's a pretty accurate 50-year plan that shows that this is going to be a net asset after the first 20 years. It's going to be and we've got it set up now where it's going to be not a burden on the general fund from day one. The Trust for Public Lands, who is the facilitator of buying the lands and getting all the grants and then transferring it to us, has given us $125,000 kickoff grant to help us, you know, bridge this a little bit. We think we're going to get community involvement. Reese Hughes from the Trail Stewards Council, they have over 120 people have written down their names to help get together and build trails on weekends and things like that, much like the under the pattern of the Arcata Community Forest. This is something that we take and go into the future with thinking into the future of this is what's best for our community. Is it the best thing to do at this moment? Maybe not, but this is the only time it's being offered to us. I was quoted the other day, it's going to take a lot of work to make it work, but I'm committed to it, and I think there's a lot of other people committed to it.
KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll be back with more from Rex Bone.
Bex Rone.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. Rex, you were talking a little bit about the homeless and some of the challenges there, and I know that there's some inertia starting to develop. I guess depending on which side you lean towards, either Virginia's group or Andy's group, yeah, that there's some not to be seen yet, but some activity, some coming together, some plans starting to develop.
The good thing about it is Andy's group and Chief Mills and Virginia Bass, Supervisor Bass's group, are working in tandem. And, you know, they've had people go down and look at the San Diego model. They've looked at the Eugene model. I mean, and everybody's a little bit different.
But there's progress.
But there is progress. At the end of the day, we have a huge drug problem, and we have a huge drug residual problem.
That's nice way to say it. That's what I'm thinking also, is that, you know, we had a couple of meth things with the last week. You know, I just week in, week out, there's drug, and some of it's marijuana, some of it's, well, depending on what side of the street you're on, related to that whole drug culture associated with the marijuana. Is there a way? I mean, you go back further than I do, a little bit. Is there a way, do you think we can go back to what was? Post legalization, so we don't have to.
No, I'm not even talking about 215 or.
I'm talking about legalization. They're growing it in the valley.
I'm talking about, we have a white drug problem that is absolutely huge, and that's, you know, the cocaine, the methamphetamine. We have a huge heroin problem. And in turn, they will do anything to fill those habits. Is marijuana a gateway? I don't know to that. I don't know if it's a gateway drug or not. I don't care. But I don't care if it is or not. My problem is we have people walking the streets that I guess that have lost all focus because they've been so involved in either snorting, shooting, or doing up these drugs that they've lost all focus and are. I don't know if they'll ever be able to come back into society on a normal basis, but can we control their behaviors?
Or do they, I know this is going to sound a real scary, and I'm not necessarily a fan of it, are they entitled to be part of the mainstream society?
Yeah, they are. They are. I mean, we didn't force them to do it, but I mean, you know, the compassionate side of me says yes, because I've got too many. I have too many
not
friends.
Not ignoring yeah. them. I mean, still taken care of, but, you know, you see, I had a buddy during one of the breaks of one of the shows talk about the fact that he was fighting. He was at one of the overpasses on Arcade, and somebody was literally having a fight with themselves. Physical confrontation.
Happens daily in front of the courthouse.
So now, do you want that on the streets?
No, I don't.
Do you want that in front of your house? Because, you know, if they're able to. I mean, there's public safety concerns that nobody really thought about early on,
and I'm not
that
so
are
sure.
part of this.
And jail's not the answer. Treatment's the answer. Compassion's the answer. But how do you
treatable?
Fund this? How do you fund this?
There's enough money going through the funnel now to fund anything. It's a priority, and I think that's the difference.
And I personally think that's probably the biggest degradation to our society right now. We have is a drug addicted society. I mean, we have so many other problems. But so many of those are part of the homeless problem that trickles down to the theft problem.
Yeah, they're all intertwined.
But if you talk to the guys in the jail, and most of the burglaries, theft, petty crimes, and things like that are happening in neighborhoods that have never happened before, aren't happening from people that don't have drug habits. It's people that are fueling a drug habit.
And it can even be more tame than that. Feeling comfortable. Do you feel comfortable in your neighborhood at night? Did you used to?
A lot of people don't.
Soft-cornered stuff like that.
I do, because I get out. I still ride my bike, and I still get out in the mornings and do things like that, and I feel comfortable. But, again,
wear high heels, so the heck?
I guess I have no basis at all. But, I mean, I'm just saying I feel for the people, for the seniors, for people that don't feel comfortable. And I don't have an answer, and I wished we did, but we're working on it.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
Nope, always good.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Rex Bone. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.